Good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday evening, and everything's cleared for takeoff, but my co-pilot hasn't quite arrived yet, though word is from the ethers that she's on her way. So we will have Pat will join us at some point, or not. Who knows? You know, we do know, and this is really an important thing, what we do know is this is where we are right now. And I guess one of the big elements that has been hitting me profoundly this week is this is the hand that has been dealt us. This is where we are right now at this moment. These are the facts, Jack. So what does that mean? Why is that? Well, I've been reading Velis lately. And Velis is a book by Philip K. Dick. And about a third of the way through it, he says that God is actually a zebra and is practicing mimicry and basically is hiding in the midst of so-called reality, and every once in a while, God shows himself. And I started wondering, well, why would God show himself, and under what circumstances would that occur, that out of the midst of regular reality, suddenly that pops out? Why would there, from time to time, hidden in the midst of everything that everybody's doing, would that pop out every once in a while? It's like there are times when a message needs to come to us. And I guess what's happened over the last week, I've dropped into this space where it's just that the messages that are coming to me are the living parable of what my life is about. It's like this is what in fact is happening. This is in fact the unfolding parable that is my life. This is what has been handed to me. And so if you start thinking of it like that, it starts putting you, you start standing on a different set of ground. Your ground suddenly became very different. And in a certain way, you almost become, your eyes open up in a different way. It's as if you've gotten new glasses. And suddenly you can see what you haven't been able to see before. It's as if you have new eyes. Is that something about in the new, what's that quote, Harry, from the New Testament?
I cannot access it at the moment.
With fresh eyes, I see. Yeah, and that's, so I started thinking like that a few days ago, and I started just feeling enmeshed in that world, that's the mystery that's been given to me right now. Do you have the eyes to see this? So the answer, of course, so I turned to the ABD, and I turned to the 20th chamber. And in the 20th chamber, this is the class is the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is a spectacular offering for voyagers past and voyagers in existence now, because the effort is to develop a set of habit patterns that recognizes the facts that we are in fact live voyagers now. Let's take a look at that 20th chamber. Okay, you've read it many a time. And the chamber says, my present form exists without limitations. Part of what happens here is a light body is descended on the voyager, and the voyager becomes a light body. I find that I can move easily through all areas of the reality spectrum. That's interesting, isn't it? You have to look around and you go, gosh. And then it says, viewing all aspects and details of all of the six lower dimensions as I wish. This is pretty provocative, right? I can the details as I wish. My movement seems to be directed by the power of my attention and places me in the locality, in that locality of the space-time discontinuum. So, how does that fit into this thing I was just saying about living a life of parable, the life of the parable, right? So what does that chamber say? What do people think is meant when this author, in my opinion, profoundly lays on our feet this concept about my movement seems to be directed by the power of my attention? First of all, what do you suppose, and since I don't have Pat here, I'm going to address this to Harry and to George. What do you think is met by my movement? What movement is the author suggesting to us?
You know, David, the way I experience that is we possess, with the development of our essential nature, we develop a certain unity of being which perceives itself not only as a vibratory sensation but as light and infinite extension, as you just said.
Yeah.
And that is where the attention is centered. And so just as this says, just the slightest impulse, you can direct your attention or your movement. Up and down the shamanic elevator.
So up and down the shamanic. Go ahead.
George, are you saying that the essence of light itself is movement?
Well, let's put it this way, Harry. It's actually static, completely static, except when it's impinged upon by our attention, in which case we provide a movement which we perceive as ourself moving forward to whatever we decide to make the focus of our attention in different dimensions or within different circumstances.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So Silverdale is telling us that movement has something to do with moving along a certain or within a certain spectrum.
Yeah, David, Rocky says movement equals series of transitions.
So Rocky is telling us this series of transitions. But this is very interesting because the author is telling us here that, first of all, that we have the ability to move. This is the first time we're seeing this, right? In this offering. The other ones talk about that we're being moved, we're being blasted and all these other things, but now it says there's a freedom of movement and that I can move by the power of my attention. Right? So, how would I then look at that in my day-to-day life? Here I am, living a life of a certain kind of a parable, and do I have any control over this? Or is it just, what's the story here? I don't know.
David, I have a slightly different take on this. I'm not a physicist, but I have studied some, and I have a very good friend who is one, who says that basically light is both a particle and a waveform, and then when we focus on it, this is Schrodinger's work, Schrodinger's cat, if you will.
Yep.
It collapses the wave into a particle. So it seems that when we have an isolated identity, it is static, but that when we remove that, that perhaps that identity and that ego of the organic machine, well, then we're just movement, we're just light in extension, and we're actually moving everywhere at the same time.
Do we have the power to direct that movement?
I'm not sure.
Well, it's a skill we develop over time, right? From initial discovery that, hey, there might be an essential self within myself. What can I learn about it? And then gradually we develop the skill to coordinate it and then direct it. I think it's a very organic development.
So the answer
with the machine, is... It's a machine function.
No, it's a function of the essential self.
No, it is not a machine function. Go ahead, Ivan.
Yeah, Rocky is saying, again, here, movement through Bardo's equals transition from chamber to chamber.
Yeah.
And then hard to say if we have free will. And then, but he makes another comment, if you're in the work, the will of the work takes over.
Okay.
So that's one formula.
Ah, yes.
Okay. So
okay, that's...
we're working with chamber 20, and at the very first paragraph of it, Rocky is then saying something about this interplay between transition, transit, the will of the work, attention, all of these things.
And Gnostic Man says, we have the power to direct movement as we develop our attention.
Which is what George is telling us, too. It's a skill that we develop, but guess what? We've got to notice it. And that's the first part of what I wanted to say. That's the first sharing I have here, is that... this part of the Voyager, because at this point I'm just going to drop the pretense as I'm reading this stuff. I'm saying, this is what's happening to me today, baby. I don't know what's happening to some Voyager, but when I read the damn thing, I'm saying, okay, that's what this author has laid at my boots today. That I have the, in this chamber, I have the ability to move freely throughout the six dimensions, and that it's somehow directed by the power of my attention. And then we have these, our friends are saying something has to do with the power of the attention of the essential self. And then Rocky has a very unique comment there that something, what did he say about the will and the work or something? Or
yes, Ivan, if you're in the work, the will of the work takes over.
If you're in the work, the will of the work takes over. Does anybody believe that's true? Any takers?
It would if your center of gravity has become the essential self.
Somebody ran into the room and raised their hand saying they believe it. Nobody else is answering because they're afraid they don't want the first part of what Rocky says. If you're in the world, they're afraid to answer that. And they're all, well, I don't know if I'm in the world.
Well, I would say, this is Ivan speaking. Yeah, I would say I've had minor evidence, like small experiences, you know, to corroborate that. Like where this is the issue of... obligating oneself. It's like if I'm stuck in a position where I have to do something for other people or convey something, and then, you know, suddenly somehow I get out of the way and something that I wasn't expecting or didn't know about is conveyed by me.
That means, he says, when I get out of the way, that's Ivan's giant ego that he's talking about, okay? When the giant ego gets out of the way, and then when he's in a particular mode, then this other thing comes through him in a sense. Tamara's here, and she doesn't want to accept the fact that she's in the work at all. even though she moved 3,000 miles across the world to... She's a malingerer. She's an idler here.
Yeah, also, you have Gnostic man here says there must be surrender, or and Shelley says yes with attention, and then Shelley is on here, and Simon Templar says they believe it. But Gnostic man says we must surrender, but this can only happen once in the stream of the work.
Once one is in the stream of the work, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, this goes back to the concept of dynamic surrender. Then this is what, I'm not sure, Shelley is saying something about the idea of, what did she say, attention?
With attention.
Okay, so... Sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I'm looking around, and I'm just kind of watching. What are the signs that are approaching me now? What's like surrounding me? What are the elements of evidence of where I am? And then here's something that I'm going to throw out. I don't really care what people think, but it's like,
For a minute, David.
You know, and then people didn't believe that. I didn't believe that. Wait a minute. I don't even remember what I said anymore. Just keep going, right? Okay.
Transcript.
I read this stuff, and it's like... Sometimes I get a sniff, and sometimes even there's a sensation as if it is a smell. It isn't, but it's an electrical sniff that something's up. At those moments, boom, as Shelley's saying, there's a form of attention that is required at that time, and the form of surrender is that the power of your attention at those times is clear and distinct, that it doesn't have to do with how much people like you out there so much as what's about to occur. And I guarantee strange and unusual things happen, strange and unusual from the point of view of the human biological machine, but perfectly natural in the world directed by the essential self in these cases, okay? And that's what I'm talking about, is that it does happen. Like, so I was out with a couple of friends over the weekend, and we were talking about a few things, and just by accident we started talking about, just... regular things, right? Like angelology. And so we're just talking about it. And then this young girl comes up, she's like, what do you call it, the hostess of the restaurant, right? To give us our menus or whatever the heck it was. And I just had to ask her what her name was. And she says that her name was Gabriella. And I said, oh, you know that has to do with the angel Gabriel. And then her face changed. This is a 20, maybe. I don't know how old people are. Young, right? And then her face changed into, don't forget she's at her job, into a little form of seriousness, and she says, I know about the angel Gabriel. No, because I had said your name, her name was Gabriella, and I said, this is named after the angel Gabriel. And then you could see her mood change for a moment, and she said, I know about the angel Gabriel. That's what I'm talking about, is that's when you pay attention and you grab those moments. In the middle of a busy restaurant, you know.
that's interesting. I think that's a very interesting example. I like that example. I mean, I was going to say, David, that I had an idea came to my attention many years ago. I think it was before I was even encountered the Book of the Dead, or you know, or the Institute. And it was, I remember it as a title actually to a literary piece called "Choosing the Event," and the theme of it was actually, it really intrigued me at the time, and then it came to mean a lot more, basically years later, but. The idea was that if you can become aware that there are multiple dimensions, that there are different reality streams, let's say, going on at once, then you have, whether it's free will or not, I'm not sure, then you have an action that you can take, which is choosing which of those streams to participate in, you know, choosing whether to jump, let's say, from the machine, you know, from the ordinary ordering on the menu, this is a service person, it's going to take your order, and so on,
yeah,
into angelology. And then it's like saying there's another stream available. And everybody who's there, whether they're a wait person or a busboy or whatever, can participate in that stream.
Well, the waiter that waited on us was very ordinary. It's a very ordinary Joe. He didn't see that part of what was going on. He was very kind, he was very happy, all of those things. But he missed that little veil that occurred that she was able to participate in. Okay? Go ahead.
We got to catch up a little bit on the chat here. Rocky said, regarding the idea of a stream conveying movement, there's confusion, though. In the Bardos, we are considering the will, attention, and presence of the essential self.
That's right.
And then he says we must develop those qualities in the essential self.
And this is what George is telling us, that it's a matter of we have to develop these skill sets. Yeah, go ahead.
What Gnostic Man is adding, we develop these qualities of the essential self, first recognizing it as possible, then by noticing, later by nurturing the experiences that we notice. So that's a kind of a step process.
Well, we have to pay attention, because this chamber right now is telling us today, it says, my present form exists without limitation. That's what it's saying today. That I find that I can move easily through all areas of the reality spectrum, viewing all aspects and details of all the six lower dimensions, which we may get into as I wish. My movement seems to be directed by the power of my attention and places me in the locality of the space-time discontinuum. So if we can allow ourselves to be in the place called my present form exists without limitations. Can you stand in that moment that my present form exists without limitation? This is not like I'm a better machine than anybody else. That's not what it means. Okay? It's not that suddenly I'm better than this other guy or this other woman or something like that. It's My present form exists without limitations. George is telling us that we can move up and down the spectrum, and that is before us. Okay? So all I'm saying is pay attention to these things, because suddenly gifts will be coming to you. And what if you are in that space? What if that is your space? Huh? That you are that being existing today, and that's without limitations. That can actually work for me at this point, because By simply listening to these instructions and allowing these sound concepts to direct my attention, I move to the areas pointed out as desirable and move away from those designated as undesirable and counterproductive to my evolution as a being out of memory, she calls this. Okay? It's exactly right, because she knows exactly the mood. It's precise. So you, so your compass, you're talking about you want a compass, right? Here's the compass, right there, it's simple, right? I move away from undesirable and what is desirable. But don't you have to develop that discernment? And you've got to develop yourself. I don't care what anybody else tells you. You have to develop yourself. Because then you are the voyager. You become the voyager. And at that point, Then you begin to develop qualities called habits. When the body drops away, then you begin to develop habits that become useful as an experienced voyager. And then you got some credibility there. So we have to determine, like, you know, oh, it's, I want to help others. Yeah. Well, guess what? If we can develop these skill sets of attention and presence, and then develop this, the skill sets of attention and presence, and every time you pop into a different level and you can develop that skill set, you have to recognize it, and then you begin to own it, and then, in a certain way, you can be truly helpful to somebody else. Okay. I was blown away by this Chamber 20. I mean, I was just totally blown away by it. And it just made me start looking, you know, I read it I've been reading it for years, but I really emphasized it last Thursday when I started preparing for the class tonight. And I read this thing, and I go, my God, does that mean that? And the answer is yes, it does mean that. It does mean that this is unfolding and I have this ease of movement and it's based on my attention. If I let the world dictate to me, then I'm a victim. And I don't want that. Because I've got good mobility and I've been placed here. I mean, look at this. I'm sitting here in this place in California 30 years ago or 20. It was about 30 years ago that I came across the work of UJ Gold. I was living in Denver at the time. And I just met Lee Loswick before then. Yeah. Lee Goldstein was coming to my Richard Rose group. I had a Richard Rose group going in Denver, and it was a very different mood, but it was a lot of working with attention and stuff like that, and he would come, just show up, and it'd be like, find sometime during the next week that you can pay attention for 5 minutes to something, when people want, whatever it was, right? And Lee Goldstein would come in, he's the only one that never did the exercise. He was the only one that didn't even try. He goes, oh, I forgot. So I admired his consistency. And then he says, oh, yeah, well, there's another group that I go to up the hill in Boulder. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, well, I'll come to your group. And that's when I met this fellow who's got a new name now, but his name then was Jerron. But he got the attitude he got blessed, I guess, and he has some other name. And a number of other people, Kay Walcher was there. And, yeah. And this is when the HBM was just being written, and they were reading chapters of it and things like that. And I remember getting the book, and the thing that blew me away, and it's important to this discussion too, is the concept in the HBM that there are two electrical bodies. One electrical body is the powerful machine, the HBM, and the other one is this delicate essential self. And that clicked with me, because I knew that that's what had to come out. And that's where this deep confidence that I have. How did I know what? So Tamara's asking me, how did I know that at the time, 30 years ago, that was the case for me? Because I knew, and I can go into some detail about why I knew this, but I knew that I was not of this world, okay? I had had a series of dreams about a number of things that were directly associated with it, and I had no context for it. But I knew that I had a destiny of some sort, and it didn't have to do with of the world. It didn't have to do with becoming better at the world. I was pretty good at the world. I am pretty good at it. But that wasn't my destiny. So it just seemed that there was this other part of me that had to flourish. And when I can sense the fact that that it wasn't this is right and this is wrong, but there were two bodies working coincidentally, that's what struck me. That was where the possibility came. So that's why the distinction then. That I had a dream about the Garden of Eden a long time ago. Yeah, this was when I was studying Kant, Immanuel Kant. I had dropped out of school, and I was studying the Critique of Pure Reason on my own. I was very upset because, I mean, I remember I had moved back in with my parents. I dropped out of UCLA. My father was convinced I was a loser, and I have to give it to him that his assessment had a lot of merits to it. But that was his world. And I'm sitting there in the bedroom reading this thing, and it just occurred to me, I said, how could it be that these guys can talk at this level of the nature of reality, and yet they haven't, I have to experience to know that it's right. I have to experience it, right? That's what hit me. And then I had the dream that in the Garden of Eden, that what was the original sin? And that the original sin was manifestation. That I became manifest on earth. And I was sinned because of that. It was, nevertheless, I knew that I was this holy creature. I was given that. Okay? So that being the case, and I mean, I went through many permutations of spirituality at that time. I was very drawn to the Sat Nam, you know, the darshan, sitting with a guru, because there was a certain purity to it, but I didn't like the devotion of it. I became a born-again Christian for a while, which is great because I loved the Bible. But I settled on Zen Buddhism because there was nothing there. It was just this purity. It was just really good. And then a number of other things, but it wasn't enough for me. I had to chew a little bit more on the bone. And I think that's when I started looking at fourth way material, and that's when I saw I met that went to the Spinoza-Gurdjieff group, and then eventually to Richard Rose, and then also to...
Yeah, Rocky has a comment here saying talk counts for nothing. So this is starting with Immanuel Kant, perhaps. And Silverdale says, God bless sacred messengers, which I would have to second.
Yeah.
Well, they do talk.
They do talk. Yeah. And so we get led. I mean, you know, the stories of how did you get here are remarkable. You know, how did I wind up in this barn tonight in front of this camera doing what I'm doing at the moment? And, you know, I've told the story many times how I met EJ in the 70s. I met him in 72. I told you this, right? And when I was in the bookstore, which is exactly, if you read the Bardo stations, exactly the Bardo, that bookstore, the long linear room with books going down to the back, Harvey Weinstein's Heritage Bookshop on Hollywood. I was way at the back with my girlfriend at the time, who was a medical student. I had dropped out of school because she was with a bum. Yeah, and I was looking at some of this. I said, do you have anything on Spinoza? He sends me to the back of the store, and a beautiful, beautiful set. It was in Latin, so I didn't buy it. And then a big plate glass window in front of the facing Hollywood Boulevard, and I see this guy bound across it, with a particularly bound across, walks in the bookstore. So there's three people in the bookstore, my girlfriend, myself, and Harvey Weinstein. And then this guy comes in all the way to the back of the store, and he says, what you're looking for is the Dion Fortune's book, the Kabbalah.
Mystical Kabbalah.
The what? Mystical Kabbalah. Is what you're looking for is the Mystical Kabbalah, and you'll find it at Gilbert's up the road. And then this guy leaves, right? That's it. I walk out of the store. Thank Harvey for allowing me to look at his wonderful rare books. I'm walking down Hollywood, which is about four blocks away from Gilbert's. And I come to a street where there's a stop light. I had to stop, right? And I'm sitting there at the curb, and I look at my girlfriend, and I said, that was incredible. And she looks at me, and she says, what? And I had that copy of the Mystical Kabbalah for years. I don't know what happened to it. I think I lent it to somebody and they ripped me off, but so be it. So, but I didn't come then. Okay, why? That was because I hadn't, that was in 72. I was still a philosophy student and a bum. And so I went out and I spent 4 years learning how to become a professional CPA, which is useful, very useful to what was going on here and to the work that I'm about to start doing on a very dynamic basis with people. And I experimented it over the weekend. It was really good. Really good.
So, David, you have comments. Rocky says, we have to listen and experience. And then Gnostic Man writes, the sacred messenger also manifests within us if we are receptive and know ourselves well enough to distinguish machine from the messenger resonating in the essential self.
Boy, that's very
and then
well
he
said.
Also says, is the inner messenger conscience?
Well, I don't need to go there. I don't need to explain it. I think what we need to do is experiment with this. We need to put ourselves out in the way of things and see what we do with it. Like tomorrow at some point I'll be taking you out to do some errands, right? I guarantee you things will happen. All right? Because we'll have certain power from you, but I mean, my attention will be on it. Because right here it tells me exactly what to do, right? It says right here, it says, first of all, my present form exists without limitations. I got it. I accept that. Premise number one. Second, my movement seems to be directed by the power of my attention. So where I want to go will be directed by the power of my attention. I won't be subject to the whims and of life. I'll be moving through them because somebody named Gabriella might show up. I have to tell her something, right? So that's, when I read chapter 20 right here, that's what I get. And we can, but we have to devote ourselves to this thing. George, I know, spends a lot of hours during the day. We have to devote ourselves. We have to begin to uncouple ourselves. We have to uncouple ourselves from the manic addiction that we have to the human biological machine. And I'm very addicted to it. I mean, it's like I'm so identified I can't, I'm amazed. It's just staggering, you know? But there it is. But that doesn't mean that I'm always, because every once in a while I can breeze away from it. And it's no longer the boss. You know, I did this art auction once for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and I was studying the Make-A-Wish Foundation. There was a little kid who was 7 years old, and I asked him, well, what's your wish? And the kid said, I want to be the boss of the ice cream man. I thought that was, there was so much purity in that. I want to be the boss of the ice cream man, too. So that's how we should read these chambers. I believe that we've been offered us, this book has been offered to us, and we have taken up, we've taken the staff up, and I've put the staff in the ground against the powerful wind of sleep to the extent I'm able. And in that regard, I say, that's the stand. And when we do that, then we can become, we have a little bit of something that we can help our fellow people with. And I guarantee you, you will. It'll happen naturally. But as the Gnostic man is saying, you have to surrender to it, you have to work it. You go, this guy works in a powerful environment, and he's in the middle of all kinds of intrigue, and he's got politics, and he finds himself sucked into it because he's got a giant ego too. And then every once in a while he'll see a different way through it. Go ahead, Ed.
A couple of comments here. Rocky said, first, conscience can be influenced by local ethics and habits.
Okay.
Which may be the case. So then he says, I feel more of a yearning, a deepening and urgency than may be associated with the inner messenger. That sounds strong to me. And then Silverdale says, subjective morality is objective, is objective morality is the same everywhere.
Right.
Oh, I think he's saying subjective morality is
local.
Yeah, objective morality is the same everywhere. And then Rocky says, those feelings brought me back here, which I would second that. I mean, I would like to say, David, that your story there about the bookstore is an excellent example of that, the awakening of conscience. I would call that, what is that expression? I was pricked by my conscience, you know. I was jogged by my conscience. But it's not something that you would identify or recognize as conscience. It's an event that was out of the ordinary that happened in your life. The Annunciation. Tamara is calling it like the Annunciation.
Right. Well,
it just strikes me that
scary part, Tamara. On the one hand, you go, oh wow, that's really cool. You know, it's just like, it's pretty cool, right? On the other hand, something was bubbling up in me enough that this fellow walked around 3 blocks, as I know where he came from. I mean, I didn't ask him this. I verified it with him later, by the way. But I didn't verify where he came from, but I knew exactly where his shop was. He just walked in this store, right? So that puts a burden on me, doesn't it? That's what I'm talking about, that we have a responsibility to accept the fact, yeah, we are in the work. Not all the way, of course not. I mean, because this is the mental, this is the bullshit of the linear thinking of the machine. You know, it's all or nothing, all or nothing. Come on, I mean, we showed up here tonight. Nice. Well put. Good word.
The reason I used the word, is it on?
Yeah, you were on.
Okay.
Don't hang up the phone.
Okay, the reason I used the word annunciation is, you know, because you can't be a little bit pregnant, you're pregnant or not, but it requires a period of growth and development and a changed state.
Well, I believe I was blessed, but that doesn't make me any different than anybody else in this room or on TV here. I was blessed from day one, just like my daughter was blessed from day one. I mean, when I look at her, when I remember the birth, I was blessed to be open to this, and we can go back and recover our lives, because now that we... Does this make sense to you, George?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, he says, because we can go back and recover our lives. Because when you were 7, there's something you did. And when you were 7, that something that you did was another, like, step in your work life that just went and led you here. Okay? I don't know what it was, but I guarantee you, you recall, you look at it, it'll be there, and it'll be right around that age, too. Okay, and I know there were 10 of those for me, because I have done the work of, and Ricardo Coyote calls that, you know, recapitulation. You go back, clear a bunch of stuff out, and what happens when you clear it out, you gain your life. Your what?
The Nimbus points.
Nimbus points. So...
Well, Janice suggesting the Hermes is around. Is that right?
Well, when I was 7, we learned about the guy that had the magic shoes.
When she was 7, she learned about the guy that had the magic shoes. That was Hermes, the messenger of the gods.
Yeah.
So on this theme, Rocky says, when the work sends someone to get you, you better come.
So, you know,
if people don't pay attention, they need 3 or 4, you know, reminders like the 2x4 over the head.
So this is the work that we're doing now. We're taking this fine volume that we're working with, and we're just saying, I'm just sharing this stuff here. I mean, it's no big deal. It's like same thing that's exactly the same thing that's happening to everybody on this call, everybody on the TV, everybody in here. Exactly the same thing has happened, just slightly different forms, that's all. Ever so slightly. So let's capture that, let's be that, let's work with that. So when we read these chambers, I mean, wait to get to 21. I'm like, so I thought I'd do 21 tonight too, but I got sidetracked. I mean, just look at the opening sentence. So this is the invitation for next week. The beloved asks me, where I want to go, what do I want to do, Okay? Not bad. So this is what George is talking about, is that we can move up and down the scale. We have the time, we have the energy, we have the focus to begin developing the beloved within us. And when the beloved within us is developed, then a calling occurs, and the calling comes, right? The calling comes, and then we can express that calling back out. And that's part of the work, part of what we're supposed to do, part of our job. I've been very fortunate in the last several years, and it's just taking off right now. So we're doing that together. We're working together in a certain manner. So read 21 and think about what has dawned on you. What happened, you know, this week? What happened around you? What happened around you? Some people got to see brand new. They got to look, and suddenly their eyes were clarified. And they got to see things they never saw before. What else you got over there, Ivan? How are we doing? Susan never made it, huh? She didn't get on?
Don't see Susan here, no.
She's not on the phone, David.
Okay, thank you, Harry. Yeah.
Or if she is, she didn't say anything.
Yeah. Is there any more comments there?
Well, it's just Rocky just added from that 21st chamber, you better not say anywhere but here when the beloved asks you where you want to go.
That's Rocky. Yeah. So take a look also. Where we are right now in the book is the big guys kind of all gave up on us, right? They said, come on. I've been waving my freak flag high. You never took it. We're going home. I think they just all went home. And so now we're preparing for rebirth. All right? We're preparing for rebirth. But boy, do we get some great, great suggestions on how to prepare. Right? I mean, the first one, what does it mean to you? Look at what it means to you when you say the words, I moved to the areas pointed out as desirable. And away from those designated as undesirable or counterproductive to the evolution as a being. You need to sense what that feels like for you. What does it feel like that this is more productive for me as a being? You can get a sense of that. Anyway, I don't know if Pat's going to make it or not. A little late. She's quite an exceptional individual. So anyway, that's all we have for tonight. Is that it, Ivan?
Any more comments, anyone? I have a comment, David. Just looking at this, my present form exists without limitations.
Yeah.
The more I look at that, I'm always looking for hints as to the meaning of form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. You know, it's the, form, and form is formlessness, and formlessness. I mean, what the hell does that mean? I mean, how can you interpret that? But if you say, if my present form exists without limitations, I think that's a way of saying my present form is emptiness, and emptiness is my present form.
Formlessness, she's telling me.
Yeah.
And
the Heart Sutra.
The Heart Sutra, exactly, well put. But it's also the last line of Prayer Absolute, right, Rocky? He knows. Oh, you got to show up to find to hear.
That was a good class.
quit next week. I become the... No, I become
Rocky.
The form and form.
G.A. Paltz says, good class, been listening in ashram and still chuckling about Boss of the Ice Cream Man.
I'm still working on that.
And Rocky says you can be everything or nothing.
So thank you all for coming once again and this tremendous opportunity. And we'll slide our way into the 21st chamber next week. When, Nate, what is the day? Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Okay. Thank you all for
coming. Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
Hey, Shikoba.
She was there.
Is that Susan or Shikoba?
Shikoba.
See? Oh. That's the hot lady.
She was quiet also.
Yes, I was listening attentively.
Yes, you were.